Welcome to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines, changing the conversation around divorce. This show is sponsored by Penguin in the Room. Penguin in the Room is an award-winning arts marketing and social media management company. If you want to jazz up your socials and have someone Instagram and tweet for you, then here's your answer. Go to www.penguinintheroom.com. As always, hit subscribe to make sure you're updated about new episodes. And we love to hear from you on social media at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. You can also email us. All the info's on our website, thedivorcesocial.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I am joined by new Divorce Club member, well, new to us, Jonty Fisher, who is a musician, classic model, and is the husband of Jess Robinson.
Hey.
This is so exciting. I've never had two members of a couple on the podcast, but we should say you're happily married to Jess.
Yeah.
She's not the divorce you're going to be talking about.
No, she's not. No, I'm the real husband rather than the practice one.
Yeah, I love practice husband. I'm definitely using that. The real one, is that what you call yourself?
Yeah.
So you are divorced. How does that make you feel, me saying that?
How does it make me feel? It was a long time ago that I actually got divorced, but the process took ages, and it's only really so. I was trying to, because it happened so long ago, and you was coming on this. So I was trying to rack my brain. I had to look things up in terms of when things actually happened. They started. I've got a son who's 9 now, and they kind of started when he was 1. So that's when it sort of started going downhill.
So 8 years.
And it's only since the first lockdown that things have started to get a little bit more workable or functional. So that's sort of the timescale. I mean, and it was difficult before that, but that, you know, just in terms of the actual divorce thing and the kind of aftermath of it has gone on that long.
That's interesting. So when was the sort of official paperwork filed? When did you get your certificate?
My divorce club certificate that I got.
Yeah.
You got really, really harsh entry requirements. was in October 2014. I think that's when we got our, it was kind of finalized and stuff. But I didn't really notice it when it kind of, it was just another bit of paperwork at the time, because we went through the courts and it was sort of two lots through the courts as well, and a big chunk of time before that, not really knowing what was happening and stuff. So it just all became just like this massive blur that just wouldn't stop. So
I can definitely relate to that, because I haven't been through the courts, but I feel like I thought it was going to be sort of lots of paperwork and then it's sorted. And actually new things crop up all the time and you're like, oh, it's going to be sorted in a minute. No, there's something else. And it really drags on and you're like, well, I'm in the middle of this thing and when's it gonna end?
Please stop.
Yeah.
How long did yours last?
Mine is still ongoing. So
oh right, so you're not an official member of your own club
yet. I know.
I started the podcast just after I got my decree nisi. So when I got the decree nisi, I felt like, oh, I'm divorced now. And that's not how it works. And then if people are listening and they're not divorced, basically do all this paperwork and then it gets sent off to some sort of judgment and they say, yes, stamp, you may get divorced, and that's your decree nisi. And then you have to wait, I think it's like 40 days or something, to apply for the decree absolute. And the decree absolute means you're actually divorced. But in between the nisi and the absolute, all sorts can happen, and you can go to court and you have to sort out financials, and we have a house together, so that is so complicated. So I assumed within 40 days or whatever the time period is from my decree nisi that I would be officially divorced. So I was like, right, I'm going to start this podcast. Here we go. And we're on series 3 now, and I'm still not officially divorced. So yes, I'm not a member of my own club, but I do say everyone's welcome. So
sorry, I didn't mean to be disparaging. I'm sorry, you can't come in here, there's members only.
No, I like that you've taken charge as a sort of club secretary and been like, well, actually you don't meet the requirements. So it's a weird one, because I feel like I'm divorced now, even though officially I'm not. Did you have a moment where you felt, because you said the paperwork didn't mean that much when you got the certificate, did you have a moment where you thought, oh, I'm divorced now?
No, I think having kids is a very different proposition to if you're kind of, you know, just without kids or puppies or cats, or I heard cats can be as complicated but with kids, because you want to get away from each other and not have anything to do with each other, but you just can't, and that's not sort of a luxury, and that makes things very, very tricky. That sort of adds a new sort of layer of tension to the situation as well. That you can be shitty to each other for a little bit, and then, you know, kind of a year down the line, you're kind of, oh, I can't remember what that was about, or, you know, kind of all the little kind of things that bugged you so much kind of disappear, and, you know, just because you can get that sort of physical space from each other. Whereas if you've got kids, you can't get that space. I think you can't you have to keep talking to someone that you're having, you know, terrible communications with, and having to communicate and about something that's so kind of emotive, and, you know, kind of you both care so much about, and so it's a very it's different. I'm not saying it's any easier or you know, harder. It's just, it's a different thing when you've got kids. I don't think there was a point where I went, oh, it's over. Thank God. Apart from just when things started to ease up a little bit. It's just kind of like, oh, it's more the fight. The fight's gone. Thank God the fight is gone, because it's drawn out, exhaustingly drawn out.
What sort of effect has all of this kind of fighting and dealing with the person that you want to run away with, but you have to share this thing, what sort of effect has that had, like, on your life and your mental health and your dating and finding someone new, which is Jess?
What kind of, I've spoken to a lot of people about divorce, particularly as it's going through, and I think I've heard one person whose divorce was more difficult than mine, just in terms of the things that were kind of thrown around. So mental health wise, it was brutal. I think, you know, just in terms of kind of just not knowing what was happening or what was going on at all. I just felt like I was kind of following, just reacting to stuff that I didn't really know what was happening. I didn't, even sort of the actual kind of thing that we are getting divorced, we didn't talk at all. So the thing that we were getting divorced was done through a therapist. So wouldn't be talked to at all, unless, you know, there was something that she needed to sort out, and that it was kind of fine. But just in terms of, I found out that we were getting divorced through the therapist. We were sort of waiting for this therapy session for ages and ages. And the therapist kind of said, you know, well, we could sort of do this two ways. We could kind of, you know, it could either be, you know, sort of how we could piece things together from here and move forward, or we can, you know, sort of see what the best way of moving forward with you splitting up and you know, my son and stuff like that. And She just went, that one. So that was when I knew we were kind of getting divorced. It's just kind of that one. So
wow. So were you both in the I'm just trying to imagine the scene. Were you both in the therapy session facing the therapist, or were you facing each other?
No, facing the therapy. And it was we didn't have much money at the time, and it was a horrible thing because we were waiting around for a sort of a couples thing. We understood that someone could look after my son at the time, who was. Yeah, I think he was probably 2 going on 3 at the time. Yeah, 2. And it turned out there wasn't. So he was kind of playing in the room, and we were sort of having to talk through this thing with this little kid kind of going around. It's like,
really hard.
But we're just waiting around to be seen by this, you know, sort of a slot to become available to speak to this woman. So, it was literally just a... it's just like a family planning thing, I think. I can't even remember.
So the first you heard of your divorce was your partner of the time saying it to a therapist, not even to you, and you hearing it.
Yeah. It was a very confusing time because, the things around the house, I mean, lots of things happened leading up to that point. But I just thought we were trying to kind of make it work there were sort of things like, oh, we really must get, you know, sort of heating put in this room and things like that, you know, sort of things that are sort of planning for the future we should do this and stuff. So in my head, that was what was kind of going on that it was difficult, but we were trying to put it back on a footing. So the first I knew of it was definitely happening, but definitely not happening was that sort of therapy. So yeah, I mean, basically, communication just completely broke down. There just wasn't any at all. And it's hard for me. I like talking. So.
So what was that moment like for you? What a difficult moment.
There was so much going on at the time. And it was just another thing on top of other things. And it was kind of, you know, it was a real wrench. I mean, mainly the thing was my son and just kind of, all the sort of hopes and dreams that you have for your kids when you've had a kid. And it's just, you know, that it's just a wrench that you're kind of, just all of that stuff is just blown out of the water. And just really remember things like that of just, it's more the feeling, you know, of just bottoms falling out.
And he was in the room at the time playing. Do you think he could sense something had happened?
Yeah, definitely, because he would do things like try and put our hands together, like he'd walk around and try and make us hold hands again and things like that. It's just
gosh. Yeah. And how do you overcome that, as you know, obviously seeing your child doing something like that, and you want the best for them and you want to give them what they want, but you can't give them that? How do you deal with that as a dad?
Just hard. Just reassure him as much as possible. That's you know, I mean, since or you know, kind of through it and stuff. Like whenever I had him, it was just, you know, I kind of really, like, my time was 100% his. Like, you know, kind of everything kind of went out the window. Just so he, you know, there was a. It's quite hard to talk about without sort of welling up with him. Just so he knew that there was, you know, kind of, you know, something solid, emotionally solid in his life that you know, it's kind of not going to go away or anything. So that's kind of how I dealt with that.
Well, it's definitely, it definitely comes across how much you care about him and love him, which is lovely to see. And I think, as well, whenever we have men on the podcast, because the majority of men that I ask to come on the podcast say no because they're scared of, and they've said to me, I'm scared of sharing the emotions or sharing, you know, their part in things. So I really appreciate you coming on. And I think it's really nice when we listen back, especially if you're, you know, the partner, whether that's male or female, of a man. To hear it from a different side of things as opposed to your side is really nice. And especially, you know, the father side of, you know, obviously you care and dedicate yourself just as much as a mother might to your child. And do you, I think it's interesting kind of gender dynamics when you tell people that you're divorced. Do you feel like they reacted to you, but people reacted to you in a different way because you're a man, or what was their reaction?
I don't know what it is to be a woman. So,
yeah, sure.
It's difficult. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think I probably chat and share more things like than a lot of men. Although at the time, it's funny that a lot of men, you know, sort of came out of the woodwork at the time. I don't know if maybe it was just the frame of head that I was in, and just kind of psychologically they, you know, saw and recognized a fellow in need. But yeah, I spoke to a lot of men who kind of gone through a similar sort of thing, or kind of, you know, just difficult divorces, or just even not so difficult. And I mean, it just hurts that the whole process kind of is a difficult thing, whether it's a, you know, whether you both agree that you're going to split up and it's relatively smooth, or if it's, you know, it's never an easy thing splitting up, is it, or an easy decision. But I don't know. I mean, I'm also lucky as being a musician. Music's kind of it's an incredible thing to do as a, you know, it's a very healing thing to do. And a lot of people who do music or are musicians are kind of pretty sensitive people, and I mean, there's a lot of assholes too, but you know, there's a real nice supportive community of musicians, and generally talk about stuff, and you know, you're kind of sitting around on gigs anyway, so there's a lot of time that, you know, you just, it's a lot more social than I guess being a comedian is. It's, you know, you're usually with groups of people and kind of spending a lot of, you know, the actual gigs, you know, doesn't last that long compared to the amount of time that you've taken getting there, or, you know, kind of hanging out in green rooms and things like that. So there's plenty of time to kind of talk about things. And
what was the response that you had then from fellow musicians or bandmates when you said, we're getting a divorce, or I'm getting a divorce?
My favourite one is from this Jewish violinist, a woman actually, a New York Jewish violinist. I went to her accent, but it's like really rich, kind of New York. Hi, how are you? that kind of thing. And she just went, congratulations! Now you can meet the person you're supposed to be with.
I love that.
Yeah, that's great. She was really buoyant. It's kind of like, yeah.
I wish someone said that to me. Someone, when I got divorced, I bumped into someone I hadn't seen for years. And they said to me, oh, I saw you recently got married. I said, yeah, I'm getting divorced now. And she said, she's a journalist, actually. She said, oh, it's actually really fashionable to get divorced now. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's why I've done it. Always need to be in fashion. I love the memorable things that people say.
It's funny how different people react and how her mum got very involved in it. And I don't mind saying this at all. So she saw it as her sort of role to sort it out. So and that just sort of adds a whole new, you can't know someone else's relationship, you can't know what's kind of going on, and fair enough if you want to. I can understand that, making sure, you know, your kids are all right and supporting them and things, but you know, if there's a child involved, it's kind of not so helpful.
Well, we had a difficult moment of mum involvement from my ex's mum, and we don't have children, but I think it's just still so difficult because, yeah, they don't know exactly what's gone on in your marriage. Obviously, they've heard the highlights and the lowlights, and they want to protect their child. But they also know you and know how to get to you. So it's really, I found that moment, and it's fine now, but I found that very, very tough.
You know, I mean, it is understandable, particularly when it kind of goes through court and stuff like that. It's as soon as you get lawyers involved, yeah. You know, I mean, their job is to kind of polarize everything, you know, financial incentives for them aside. It's, you know, it's their job to kind of write down your best argument and to kind of disregard their best argument or any kind of argument in their favor. So as soon as you do that, you have this massive polarization. And so I can understand her wanting to get involved for that kind of stuff. But just the actual kind of personal side of things, kind of trying to sort that sort of thing out. And even beforehand, because my relationship with my parents is, you know, I love them dearly, but, you know, I'm old now, so older, you know, kind of 50, and you know, kind of it's not really their business. That's the way I kind of think. Obviously, it affects them, or it affected them, and they want to be supportive and stuff like that. But the thought of them getting involved in it is, to me, is just a bit weird. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that's me. Maybe that's
no. I think my mum gets involved with me in that she'll sort of talk to me about it and give me her very strong opinions. But yeah, she wouldn't get involved in the situation or contact my ex. I don't think she hasn't so far. We'll see. So I think I wanted to talk to you about the courts, because in series 2, I spoke to Kerry Howard, and she talked about going through court and how it's a weird process. And we also talked about what to wear to court, because that's what I'd worry about. So as a dad, what do you wear to court? Like, do you wear a suit, or is it two businessmen?
That's I heard that episode, actually. Yeah, it's a really good episode there. Yes, I wore a suit, but I was very aware that it looked a little bit... I wore a suit because everyone told me to. My sister told me to, my mum told me to, and yeah, having said they didn't get involved, so, just kind of dress up smartly, and lawyer said the same thing. And I felt a little bit like I was kind of, it's sort of like a power thing, like I was kind of coming in a suit. Cause I'm lucky I get made suits with my job. I kind of get I get suits nice. Made for me and stuff. So my suits are, you know, they're lovely suits, they're Clements and Church suits they're beautiful. They look really beautiful. So it looks like you've kind of overdone it, and you know, I maybe should have kind of taken some shabbier suits or something like that.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because I remember Kerry saying she wanted to feel like a business.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Woman with stocks when she went in there, and I guess it's to bring the power, whereas from the male perspective, maybe because, you know, heterosexual white man, you sort of have the power. So it's like maybe you need to lessen your power.
I was kind of more comfortable with the sort of smart casual thing, which I never did. I always wore the same suit. I just went in with the same suit, which is my kind of shabbiest one of, you know, it's my most worn one. So it's kind of like starting to kind of go a little bit sort of shiny in places and stuff. But, it, you know, it still looked nice. But yeah, that the whole thing of kind of what to wear for court, and I mean, the whole court process is a very weird thing. I mean, I don't know if it's the same for everyone, but it seemed to me that it was just mainly your lawyers negotiating with each other. It seemed to me that's what the court process was. And every time the lawyers kind of went out of the room, I think it was just them kind of arguing with each other in legal terms, and then kind of coming back in the room and sort of saying, well, I can't convince them to do that, but basically just trying to convince you to come onto their side that they've negotiated, so then they could then go back to the judge. But I think it was Kerry that said, you know, it's got a lot of waiting around. You've just no idea when you're going to be called in. And I think that is so the lawyers can negotiate and the judge can kind of just sit there and go, well, you've come to an agreement? Marvellous. Let's do that then.
So what does it look like? Because I haven't been to court for divorce. So all I'm imagining is when I was at school, we did this thing called mock trial, where we'd all like go to a court and then play, you know, lawyers. And I played obviously one of the difficult defendants who had a Cockney accent and was cracking jokes because I enjoyed that. And I made the other poor boy who was being a lawyer really struggle because he didn't know what to do with me. But yeah, so we did like play courts, mock trial. And so I'm imagining it like that, like in a defendant box or in a court. But is it actually over a table like you see in American law firms?
Yeah, it's much more like that. It's more like an office setting. Well, mine was anyway. Because I had two different sessions or two extended, well, it'd probably be called seasons, wouldn't they? Lots of episodes.
Yeah, and nice.
Two different seasons of my divorce. And one was in Reading, and then I moved down to Brighton because that's where she moved, so to be closer to my son. And we had like another sort of stint after the court proceedings had finished. There was another kind of stint down here. And the courtroom here was a bit more like, you know, what you'd see on, you know, American courtroom dramas. It was a little bit more like that, but you're still, it's basically just like an office really. The one in Reading was, yeah, just a desk, and you're the judge has a bigger desk than you and kind of sits behind it, but you're almost like a classroom, like you're like school kids. It's very like school, actually. Going to court is very like school. It's the rules of the playground, and it just turns into this, yeah, it's just a very serious version of it.
And how does it feel when you're in court? Because obviously, you said it feels like school, but also you're like fighting for what you want and what you think probably, hopefully, is best for your child. Is it, did you find it quite emotional, or was it quite, did you have to just sit there and be quiet until something had happened?
You have to sit there. So you employ your lawyer to speak on your behalf. So you don't do any talking at all. Like, I mean, if the judge asks you something, you answer, but I, you know, didn't, there's no point where you get a chance to refute anything. And it I think just whatever you're dealing with that day is what you're dealing with. And I'm pretty certain, because there's so much going on, no one really looks through. There's no one there kind of reading through the whole thing of what's happened before. You get like a little, they'll get a little synopsis of kind of what's being decided in the last court hearing. And they'll read that. So maybe a page of A4 they'll kind of read, and that's your whole thing summed up. So whatever you're trying to decide on the day, whether it's kind of financial things or what's happening, you know, kind of house or, you know, your child, or that's just the little kind of thing that they're, you know, tunnel vision that they're looking at that day. And you've got all these other things in your head of just kind of, you know, what's gone on, you know, what's happened, and you're just, you know, they're just not interested in that. And quite, you know, quite rightly, they're not interested in any of the kind of personal stuff. They just want to know, they just kind of set something up that's kind of, however hashed at the end, it's just something that you can kind of get on, and, you know, a few years down the line, you'll be fine. Basically, I think so. But at the time, you're just kind of, you're kind of, yeah, but that just, that didn't happen. these things kind of go, but yeah, no one really cares. No, that's not what they're dealing with. They're just dealing with this one thing. So emotionally at the time, just kind of, you just got all these things kind of going on. It's kind of like, oh, well, there will be a time when all that can be debunked, or, you know, kind of all that, you know, it's kind of, it's so obviously not right, or, and yeah, okay, they're just dealing with this. And then there isn't, you know, it's kind of, it's finished, and you kind of go, oh, wait. So yeah, it's any, you know, kind of the personal stuff that you're feeling is nothing to do with the court. I mean, you know, it's hard because you're with, you know, the person you're divorcing is there and lawyered up, and but all that personal stuff is kind of irrelevant, really, in court, for the, you know, as far as the court's concerned, it's irrelevant, which is sort of how it should be. But at the same time, that's hard to deal with when you're receiving that.
Yeah. So when did the court procedure finish? How long ago?
Yeah, well, I'd met Jess by the time it's, yeah, so it was, yeah, so 14, it was probably about three years it went on for, I think, possibly a bit more. I can't remember, actually. That's all.
It's interesting that you'd met Jess by then. So, because that's what I wanted to talk to you about next, is dating whilst you're going through a separation and all this stuff, and looking after your son. How did that work for you? Dating, did you online date?
No, not at all. I sort of had the opposite problem, actually. That's not not bragging anyway. I remember the first time I kind of got contact with my son again, and sort of dropping him off, having to drop him off, just so hard, so difficult, and sort of people from past kind of calling me up. So I dropped him off, and then some like literally 10 minutes later, someone called me up and said, you know, now you're getting divorced, you know, I think we should be together type thing. You know, it's kind of, we should, you know.
Oh, so I
you know, there's people that came to the wedding as well. It's sort of like, you know, I really wanted to say something at the wedding, and kind of, and then I just, like, you know, kind of.
So all these people came out of the woodwork, like, basically harboring love for you.
In that trip home, I had two people call me from my past, and I was just like, just in a place where I was just kind of like, fuck off. You know, just like not thinking. I literally just kind of put all my energies into my son. And
I mean, it's so nice that you wanted to put all your energy into your son. But I have to tell you that when I got separated, I was just wishing that someone from my past, who's very attractive and wonderful human being, would call me and be like, oh my God, I've been harboring secret love for you for years. Let's feed together. And then I'd be like, okay. And then it'd just all be sorted. So that was like my dream scenario. So I feel very jealous that it happened. But what did you say on the phone to those people?
They're both really good friends. Like, and you know, I do love them very dearly. And it's not a, they're both with people. So that was the kind of and yeah, I just saw it as their kind of, as more of a sort of fantasy thing, and I didn't really take it too, you know, it was serious but not too seriously. It's kind of they were probably going through things in their marriages, and I was a sort of fantasy route out, and not particularly a reality. It's just kind of a way of an excuse to, I think people do that, rather than actually kind of confront the stuff that's going on in their relationship. So I think that's kind of why affairs happen quite a lot. It's just, it's easier to kind of scupper it. You know, affairs are good, you know, they're really good fun. while they're going on, and you're not kind of found out and things, you know, it's kind of, you can be whoever you want with that person, and they can be whoever they want. So I think it's sort of like this fantasy way out. It's not reality. It's not a, sorry, I'm not advocating affairs, but you know, I didn't really take them too seriously, just because they were obviously going through things in their marriages. So it was just kind of I told them that they should sort things out with their other halves.
And did that affect your friendship with them afterwards? Are you still friends with them now?
No, not really. Because I that's the one, like, well, one good thing. Lots of good things came out of being divorced. But the thing which I kind of held on to through the whole thing that kind of kept me sane was just being brutally honest. And I meant, you know, more with myself than with everyone else. Because you can't, as soon as you start, like, particularly when things are so kind of extreme and emotive, and you know, you're kind of right in the thick of divorce, it's a horrible, horrible time. And if you start making things up in your head, or like little tiny deviations of a story, the next time you tell it, it just gets more and more. And then because you're kind of in this really intense situation, you just. Reality becomes this sort of very sort of elastic thing, and I think it's quite easy to lose it. So yeah, I just went into kind of, right, just going to be brutally honest with myself, which meant with other people I was kind of a similar thing. So having just dropped my son off, I was in a mess anyway, and I was just like, sort it out with your partners. I'm not an answer to anything. So, yeah, and quite brutally. And I thought, you know, I think people kind of, they respond well to honesty, I think.
So you had all these offers, but you were like, no, I need to focus on myself and my son. When did you have a moment of like, okay, I could be open to meeting new people now? Or did it sort of happen to you?
I'm not very good with, I'm very sort of loyal as a person, so I don't like kind of having lots of partners or confusing things around. So if I'm serious about someone, I'll kind of stick with them, like right from the word go, or okay, I'm with you type thing. Even if it's kind of, you know, just you know, kind of at the beginnings, and you're kind of just trying things out. So it was people that were kind of in my world, as it were, kind of either musicians or, you know, kind of people I knew that, it was more sort of stumbly. There's a couple of times I didn't have that many. I think maybe three people I saw before Jess, or two even. It's going to sound very uncomplimentary, isn't it? But yeah, and it was kind of going really well, or things were going really well, and just like a little tiny thing would happen, and it would be just like proper scared runoff type feeling inside.
I can totally relate to that. Like, I feel like when I started dating, I was like so ready to like get out there and meet more people and have sex. But when I was like dating people, yeah, the tiniest things would happen. And like, I'd be like, no, absolutely not. That's the end of them. And, you know, totally things that are fine, actually, like in the long term. I'm trying to think of an example, but I can't think of one. But I felt that I was, yeah, really cutthroat. And I think it was scared me being like, no, we're not going to get into this again. We're not ready.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because it's raw, isn't it? Emotionally, you're raw and yeah, kind of. And you know, I knew I wasn't in a good place anyway. And I don't really like sort of messing people around. And I kind of did, but not sort of intentionally, but, and you know, people I, you know, cared for that I knew. And, so yeah, I didn't really, dating wasn't really on my mind or anything. And yeah, then Jess happened.
Then Jess happened. And obviously, you know, you're falling in love. And how did that feel, you know, when you were in the midst of divorce and court and...
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like... sounded like I was in the midst of it. It was all kind of over. So we'd had like the main bit. I took her back to court so I could get more or better or different contact arrangements with my son because they weren't working and wouldn't shift. So the main bit of the court process had finished, and it was just kind of like the tag on little thing. And I just met Jess kind of at the end of it. So it was literally just like a, you know, the last little bit, so it wasn't really...
But I guess that's still quite intense, like new relationship, and you're like, so I'm going to court to try and, you know, organise seeing my son.
Yeah, I mean, it was really helpful because Jess was sort of the opposite of other people in that she was really unsure, I think because of her experience as well, like really kind of and standoffish and... Not standoffish, but, you know, she... We got on so well, like I just like the first date we went on. It's just like just constant talking and like really really lovely talk. Yeah, just nice conversation about lovely things and it felt so good. Everything about it felt so good. And that was the other thing. I didn't have to try to trust her, which is I remember being really conscious of that. It's like I just trust you, and it's not even a question. There's no. Yeah, it was just do, and that was a lovely kind of feeling, just to not have to worry about that, or kind of not have to. I knew she was going to be honest with me, and yeah, we talked about things, and we talked about things very openly, and kind of, and that's wonderful. I think not enough people do that.
And so, being in a relationship with another divorced person. Did it work in a way that you understood relationships a bit more, or the breakdown of relationships, or did it make you want to work more or notice signs, or was it just another relationship?
I guess more wary of being attentive to a relationship, like as in, you know, there are things that you have to work at. That's, you know, and it's kind of your... I love being in relationships. It's like, you know, it's kind of, I much prefer being with someone, and marriage isn't, you know, it's not, it's funny that, you know, kind of getting married again, the thought of getting married again after what happened before was just, you know, even getting married in the first place, it's kind of, I didn't really see what the point was really. It's just kind of, you know, it's just, we're together and we've made a commitment together, and, you know, but it's a lovely thing standing up in front of people and kind of going, we're together, you know, and all your friends are there, and it's kind of, everyone goes, hey. That's the...
Yeah, I love weddings. Weddings are the best. I can't wait to have another one.
Yeah, and the second time around as well, it's kind of we both knew what we wanted and, you know, kind of what we didn't want and kind of, I think we're just... Yeah, you know more what you want. You're kind of a bit more grown up about it, and the way you go into it is different. I think a lot of people, first wedding, go into it. It's sort of there's a little bit of fairy dust, and it's a little bit automatic. This kind of, I mean, I know Jess had this, and I had this as well. It's kind of just like voices in your head that you really should listen to. You just kind of, I'll be fine. It's like, you know, that's what I mean by being honest. It's like, you know, you kind of, those voices, just listen to those voices, because they're, you know, it's kind of, it doesn't mean to say that, you know, they can take over and scupper it, but, you know, just give air to those voices and Yeah, it's we definitely did, and our relationship now is, we just talk about everything, anything that kind of might come up or might be, yeah, just little things that you think are completely inconsequential. We just talk about that, or, you know, kind of, it might be inconsequential, it might be something that's really bugging someone, or, yeah, it's nice. I love it. Like, the communication thing is
sounds so nice. So now you're on your second marriage, your real marriage after your practice wife, as Jess would say. So how does it feel now, having been through a divorce and now being on the side of a happy, and you seem very, you've been grinning since you've been talking about Jess like nonstop, and now you're on the side of a happy marriage. How does looking back at the divorce feel? This is how I want to feel. So tell me what I can look forward to.
Yeah, I'm very analytical and philosophical in my thinking, and I always have been. So it's probably not the same for everyone. I got more positive things from the divorce than the negative. I wouldn't wish it on, like, the harder side of it, you know, I wouldn't really wish that on anyone, but I don't think I'd change kind of what happened. So looking back at it is, it's more for me, it's just like, what the fuck? What the fuck was that? and it's kind of, you know, sort of normal service has been resumed type thing now. It's kind of, you know, it's sort of.
I think that's you saying normal service has resumed. I think is a really nice, like, sentiment of just, oh, it's all right now. We're going to be okay. If anyone has really resonated, and I'm sure they will, with your story and your kind of journey through divorce, or they're about to go through a divorce, or something similar is happening to them right now, what advice would you give them, or what would you say to them?
It does end. And there's beautiful light at the end of the tunnel. It does, you know, lots of people said that to me while it was going on. It's kind of, and it really doesn't feel like it. And it really, you know, it gets hard, sort of just the little things get hard. It, you know, kind of, I remember kind of going shopping around Asda on my own, sort of picking up a little basket of, you know, everything for one. And it's just, it's just stupid, but I was just breaking down in the aisles, kind of like just putting.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible. Just like sort of finding yourself and your life again afterwards. It just seems, and, you know, there are times where it just seems really tough and it's not going to happen, but it will, and it does. And it's really, you know, it's good. It's, you know, the end point will come, and it's a good point. It's a good, you know, you'll find whatever you're looking for at the end.
At the end of the divorce rainbow, you will find the pot of gold.
Big pot of hope gold.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, I think that's a lovely place to finish. Shanti, thank you. That's been great. Where can people find you online and follow you on social media?
The usual kind of, Instagram and Twitter and all that, is Jonty Fish at whichever. Yeah, that's so Jontyfish. And I play with the London Essentials as well. So we kind of go around the world doing silly things with them.
Amazing. So they can listen to you too. Oh, thank you. That's been so good.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, hi. Thank you for listening to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines. Please leave us a review. Please, please. It would be super nice. They're lovely to read. They keep me cheery and happy and keep me going. But also it affects our listing in the podcast charts, which are very important because that's how more people find the podcast. And I'd love to help more people get through those really tough heartbreak and divorce times. And they're more likely to find us if we're higher up on the charts. So if you'd like to leave a review, I'd love you forever. You can leave them on iTunes is the big one, or most podcast platforms do them as well. I'll take all the reviews you've got to give. You can also get in contact on Twitter and Instagram at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. We have a website, thedivorcesocial.com, and we have a Patreon account, which means that you can support the podcast for as little as £2 a month. And it helps me with all the admin costs. It also means you have access to our 90s-style divorce and heartbreak chat room. And there's lots of exclusives on there, little bits of audio that you don't get in the main podcast, and some giveaways as well. So I'd love to see you over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Samantha Baines. And please leave a review. Did I say that already? Please leave a review. Love you forever.